We are live.
Hey, everybody.
How are you, Michael?
Doing really well. Thanks. Doing great. How are you doing?
Good, good. Thank you.
Good.
So, yeah, let's just jump right into our, we have four questions today of various lengths, and we shall hopefully bring a lot of value. Let's see.
Let's do it.
Actually, the first one is you know, it's not about, this is not about somebody having troubles. Well, it kind of is, but here's a question from Faye. Hello, Daniel. I've been struggling a little bit lately again. I was wondering if I can get some little more deeper one-on-one advice through text or something. Is bedtime the right place? And so for those of you who are not familiar, Bedtime is an app that I do, you know, coaching. Here it is, Bedtime. Stuff like that is on the App Store. And yeah, that's a great place if you want one-on-one text-based coaching. It's perfect. Now, we also have, of course, our self-coaching master program where we teach, you know, the path to immunity towards insomnia. And this is a video-based program that has a weekly drop-in class. So just like we're sitting here in front of it, you know, using our webcams, we have a drop-in class via Zoom, where either myself or Coach Michael coach in a group setting. That said, you know, today, for example, I think only one of our clients is available. So today, I'm just going to spend a whole hour talking to one person, which a lot of people are asking about. Like, Daniel, can I call you? Can I Zoom you? I don't do one-on-one Zoom or calls, but it just so happens that today I'll spend a whole hour with one client. So I think we can't guarantee that, but if you're okay with talking to myself or Coach Michael with maybe a few other people there that have very similar things going on, then I think our self-coaching master program is excellent.
Yeah, whatever works best, right? You know, everybody's different. So if you want the one-on-one, you got the Bedtime app. If you want the more community kind of setting, sharing with other people, then maybe the self-coaching is the place to be. So it's really up to the person. We have options, and that's really what it should be.
100%. And Faye, yeah, I look forward to working with you if you, whatever you choose, of course. So with that said, let's move on to, actually, this segues into Young, which is someone that I actually have worked with using Bedtime. So let's read this together. Hi, Daniel. I felt like I was sleeping somewhat better after completing the Bedtime app program and reading your book to educate myself on sleep, but now I'm in a very rough patch again. Just wanted to know if you could give me insight for my own confidence. I've been having a lot of alternating nights between decent sleep and then the next night not getting sleepy at all, probably from the sleep deprivation building up from a bad night, crashing the next night. I know I shouldn't go to bed until I'm sleepy, but a lot of times I notice my eyes get so tired and start to sting from having them open for so long that I'd rather go to bed and at least close them even if I'm not sleepy. Is it better to just stay awake all night if not sleepy, or at some point go to bed even if not sleepy? I think the classic CBTI methods typically state that you should use sleep restriction, but never sleep restrict less than 5.5 hours. Sometimes I feel like I'm the only one that hasn't found lasting success through CBTI and your methods. I think another complication of this is that I have mild sleep apnea and migraines when lying down. I notice a lot of times I'll be so hyper aroused or due to the sleep apnea, start catching myself snoring and snoring and abruptly startle back to full wakefulness. That in turn seems to reduce my sleep by for the rest of the night. The migraines make it hard for me to get comfortable and relax when I move to bed because my head starts throbbing and pulsating no matter what position I put my head in. I've gotten checked out medically through MRIs, vision exams. Doctors think don't think it's anything serious like a tumor or increased fluid pressure. I know that these can both disturb sleep like you talk about, but cannot be cause of sustained chronic insomnia. That is a result of hyperarousal anxiety. Love reading this, by the way. However, all these factors combined seem to seriously affect my sleep on a nightly basis until I'm so sleep deprived, I just crash. When I get sleep deprived, I often notice there's no transitory state between wakefulness and sleep, such as sleepiness. It feels like 1 minute I'm awake watching Netflix, and next moment I'm completely out without the sleepy feeling in between. It's like a little scary to think about. And how, if I was like driving at night, it would be very dangerous. So I had like multiple things to talk about here, but I'll let you go first, Michael. What are your kind of spontaneous reactions when you hear this message?
Yeah. So first, you know, it's common for people who have a little bit of sleep apnea to kind of have those gasp arousals, you know, kind of like fragments of their sleep. And if someone is more susceptible or prone to insomnia, more predisposing factors, that kind of thing, those little snort gasp arousals can trigger more wakefulness than someone who isn't more prone to insomnia. So ask your doctor, get checked out, screen for sleep apnea. Just get that, like, take it out of the equation. I like to say it's just a common sense. You want to breathe right. Take it out of the equation. Make sure that's not muddying the waters of anything else. Then, you know, the whole idea of perceiving being truly sleepy before bed is one of my big interests when it comes to sleep, is that self-perception of, you know, are you more than tired? And, you know, whatever type of insomnia help or coaching or even treatment, whatever you're working on, that's usually a big part of it. The whole idea of, you know, you're in bed when you're sleepy. You know, if you're not sleepy, you probably shouldn't be in bed, or at least not flat with the light off, quote unquote, trying to sleep. You should be maybe sitting up in bed and doing something you enjoy. So the whole idea of being sleepy before you put yourself in bed, or being sleepy enough for sleep, sometimes it's phrased, is really a helpful thing. And to perceive that, and I'm a proponent of that. I mean, that app that I developed, the Sleep on Cue app, it was kind of designed to help with that a little bit. And the whole perception of sleepiness, it's really important. And I think it can be learned. It can be developed. You can become better at perceiving whether you're truly sleepy or you're just tired. And that hyper arousal can make it difficult to perceive that. So over time, I think people can, I've seen it actually, people can get better at learning when they're sleepy enough for sleep, because that's a core component to CBTI, to just, you know, sleep coaching in general. You know, the goal is not to hang out for long stretches of time in bed with the light out and you flat, quote unquote, trying to sleep. That over with long stretches of time, it leads to frustration, anxiety, and overthinking about sleep and wondering, what am I doing wrong? And how can I get to sleep? You know, trying, just the big old effort kind of thing. And so perceiving that, and what this person, I forget the name, yeah, I'm always terrible with the names. Yeah, what they described is common, and that is kind of tired watching something. The next thing you know, you're asleep, and whatever happens in between isn't very salient. It's suddenly like, I just woke up. In other words, you were just asleep. And before that, all you know is at one point you are tired. So I think it's helpful to become more aware of that progression of getting sleepy. I think in the long run, it really can be very helpful. So that's what struck me when I was listening to you read that email.
Very, very good. Yeah, I think that there were multiple things I thought about. And, you know, I talk about this all the time, but it's so important that I want to really start there again, which is hyper arousal. Okay. And for anyone that's new to the channel, you know, and for a little review for you, Young, it's any type of like heightened level of kind of alertness, you know, a kind of heightened emotional state that can come from anxiety, stress, worry, preoccupation, puzzlement, curiosity, bewilderment, any of that kind of like excitement too, like increases your level of arousal, really. Hyper arousal is that called. And a lot of things that seem kind of strange or bizarre happen when you are hyper aroused. And the one that I took note of was this, like, there's zero transitioning. You know, one moment I'm watching Netflix and then I'm asleep. I don't feel sleepy at all. Classic with hyper arousal. It can actually often even lead you to a place where you're not sure that you slept at all. And you think, I think I was up the whole night, or maybe I had like this transitional state near like paradoxical insomnia. Time traveling, like I was awake, I've been awake the whole time, but time just skipped ahead. Classic with hyperarousal. Nothing strange or unusual with that one. And then the question always becomes, you know, so how do I become less hyperaroused? And it's important to know that whenever you ask that question is kind of part of the problem. You know, when you're listening, you're thinking, mm-hmm. like, how can I become more calm? How can I become more relaxed? How can I become less hyperaroused? Then you're thinking of something you want to do to become less hyper-aroused, And that's not where it comes from. Hyperarousal comes from Hyperarousal comes from trying to achieve something, and kind of the opposite of being calm and not hyperaroused comes from not doing anything in particular. And for those of you who are new here, like, education, I think, really is helpful, because when you understand sleep, you understand insomnia, then it's like, oh, there's really nothing to worry about. So you just know that, and then you kind of naturally become less hyperaroused. And here's the thing for Jung is, you know, Jung wrote in the opening statement here that I think I was getting somewhat better, you know? And I think when that happens, it is super, 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 super important not to, like, explain that away, you know?
Right.
That happened. You were doing better because you were learning and understanding, and you were doing less, you know? You were not trying to figure it out as much. You know, you were more willing to be awake at night. You were more open to having insomnia. You were not resisting it. That is the only way you see progress. That's why you saw progress, Jung. You did a fantastic work, and you were on, you know, you were going the right track. You still are. I think this is just a little speed bump, because, you know, you unsubscribe for bedtime, and that often happens. So that's super, super important. And the answer is always more of the same. You did less. You started doing a little better. Now you have kind of a speed bump, and you think, what should I do? More of the same. Do less again. And one thing that I think is one thing that really, really can get people stuck is believing that there's something wrong, right? If somebody has that notion deep inside their brain that I think there's something wrong with me, my case is a little bit unusual, there's something strange going on, that is really, really difficult, you know, to get past that. So in Jung's case, we have the, you know, Jung says, I know that there's a lot of things that can cause sleep disruption, but none of them can cause insomnia. But then Jung is going in the direction of, but there are multiple things. We have the migraines plus the sleep apnea plus that, and all that combined perhaps can cause a lot of sleep disruption. And I say no. I say no. Even if you have 22 things, they do not cause insomnia. Insomnia only comes from hyperarousal, you know, and hyperarousal only comes from your thoughts, right? So I think when you grasp that completely, fully, there's nothing strange going on. There's nothing wrong with me. It's just my thoughts that are, like, you know, my problem-solving brain is working against me a little bit. That's all. That is all. Super, super important. And we talked about that already. And then, the specific question here. You know, do I have to wait until I'm really sleepy? I think that often becomes an effort again. It's like, you know, I gotta wait. And then you're waiting to become sleepy. And when you're waiting to become sleepy, you become more hyper aroused because you're waiting for something. So I think it's really good to do something super simple, you know?
Yeah.
Have your alarm set for, let's say, 7 in the morning. Stop checking the time at 11. Do things you enjoy. And don't wait for sleep to happen. Don't wait for anything in particular. Just do whatever you feel like. Let sleep come your way. And if you feel like closing your eyes, close your eyes and rest. Absolutely. Just go down that gentle, you know, no pressure path. And you'll do fantastic, Jung. I truly believe it. So I was, you know, as you can tell, I'm like extra, like I'm a little extra now because of bedtime, you know, my client on bedtime, and I really want to give Jung everything. So anyway, that's the end there. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It's like if you go to bed and you start trying to will yourself to sleep, that's taking you in the wrong direction. But if going to bed, if you feel pretty tired, you know, possibly kind of sleepy, tired, you're sort of in the middle, and you feel very calm and relaxed going to bed, and it feels nice, and you're really enjoying it, and maybe you're like watching something in bed or reading a little bit or anything, even with the light out, and you're just like doing some self-reflection or anything like that, perfectly fine. The idea is that you're not ever in any way trying to will yourself. You're not trying to do something specifically to make yourself sleep. That's the key. It's not so much where you are and all that. It's just that you are not in an active state of trying to sleep. Whatever that means to every, and it's a little bit different for every person, but whatever that means to whoever's watching this, that is the goal. The goal is to not make effort, not put effort into sleep. It doesn't matter if you're in bed with the light off. If you are not trying to sleep, you're enjoying the alone time in your own mind or something like that, perfectly fine. Enjoy it. That's the key. And this hyperarousal, you know, it will you can't make it go away. You can't tell yourself to be less hyper aroused. You just, it becomes, it happens with lack of effort. It happens with you being educated about sleep and about how insomnia starts and perpetuates. That's how hyper arousal starts to decrease. So it's not like you can do a specific thing to sleep. It's not like you can do a specific thing to reduce hyper arousal. Not one little thing. It's not like you're missing a simple little thing. It is an overall picture, your attitude towards sleep. You know, the timeless night. These are big concepts that lead to NATO. They lead to non-attachment to the outcome of sleep. You have to become like, you're like an observer of the whole thing. You're not like, you're not in it. You're just sort of like, it's, you know, it's happening. And I am trying to articulate things probably that are hard to articulate, but it's kind of like that. It's the paradoxical tightrope. It's the not applying specific effort to sleep that leads to non-attachment, that leads to less hyperarousal and less focus in general on sleep.
Absolutely. It's so true. It's like the goal is not to have a goal. When you allow hyperarousal to happen, it dissipates. I thought there was like one more thing I wanted to add, but it skips my mind. So yeah, so Young, just let us know if there's any follow-up question, and thanks so much for staying in touch.
Great email.
I think there are some live comments here.
Yep.
Michael says, I've been watching your videos for a few months now and just want to say it's a big help. I've gotten much better at going to bed. Just need to master not checking the time when I get up. I don't get upset at whatever the time says, but if I don't check, I tend to stress out about it. I think I don't get upset. That's like super, super important, like the self-kindness. And then, and first of all, you know, I'll say thank you so much for sharing this. And I'm super happy this has been helpful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just go down the most gentle path. I think, you know, for anyone maybe besides Michael here, it's like, I think a lot about what you said the other day, Michael, about like kind of being honest with yourself. You know, a lot of people are like, I just happened to glance at the microwave. And then, but you are probably wanting to have control. You know, you probably have a little, it's hard to let go of control. And that's totally fine. Don't be upset.
Yeah.
If things are trending in the right way and you're not getting upset at what the time says, perfect. But for a lot of people out there, if you don't check the time at all, that's probably the best for most people. But what do you think, Michael?
Yeah, you know, it's if it works, it works, right? That's kind of it. If it works, it works. If it's not broken, don't fix it. I mean, these are kind of phrases that we use in just everyday life. So as long as with Michael, I would just, you know, one last check, like, are you really sure you're not checking the time for a specific reason other than pure idle curiosity? If it's pure idle curiosity, no problem. That's fine. But if there's an element of, oh, I want to see if I made it to 3 a.m. or if I made it to 4 a.m. or, you know, you just have to kind of be honest with yourself and just, you know, have a little self-talk. And then you decide. And if it's not a problem, it's not a problem. So
exactly. You know. I think to summarize this is like, I think Michael is on the path to becoming like less attached. Mm-hmm. So just like keep going where you're going. And Michael did get rid of the sleep ring. Bad idea. Sleep 100%. That's such a low-hanging, easy fruit. I actually had a client the other day who said, oh, by the way, I think I should stop using my tracker. I'm like, yes, of course you should stop using the tracker. All right.
Yeah. I wonder also, this is a side note, you know, the holiday season and gift giving and all of that. You wonder if people are going to get a bunch of these like Fitbit things and rings, all this kind of stuff.
I'm sure.
You know, be careful. It's kind of a slippery slope. Save the receipt. That's my favorite saying. Someone says, oh, I did this. I got the new whatever bed mattress thingamajig. Did you save the receipt? That's all I say. That's my only comment.
Delina says, I have a big problem when I feel sleepy and I try to get some sleep. I don't feel sleepy. So then I get out of bed, but then it's the time. This is such a classic. I'm getting less sleep and feel tired. Delina, I think this is, I see Michael's reading it again, but I think I understand it. It's kind of like, I feel sleepy. I try to get some sleep. Then I don't feel sleepy. Then I get out, and then I feel sleepy, then I want to get some sleep, then I don't feel sleepy, right? We're both laughing because we recognize that one, but not to belittle anything here, Kalina. It can be very, very frustrating, of course. But I think it's, I call this the Houdini effect. It's like when the sleepiness just, wow, where did it go? I was super sleepy, yeah. but it just went away. And yeah. I think the most important to know there is that it's nothing strange at all. I want to go where you usually go, Michael, which is it's actually a sign that your sleep system is in perfect shape. It's working great. Meaning, when you don't feel any threats, you're not worried at all. You don't even want to sleep. You know, you want to be awake. Sleep comes easy to you. Your body tells you this is a safe time to sleep, and you're sleepy, so now you're going to sleep. But then you become a little bit worried about being awake at night, right? So mm-hmm. the moment you want to be awake, your brain goes, there's a threat, there's a problem, wake up. It's just the brain is working exactly as it's supposed to. It's supposed to wake you up when there's a threat, and it's supposed to allow you to sleep when there's no threat. The confusion is that your brain thinks that being awake at night is a threat. So that's why this happens, the Houdini effect.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get like the whole idea of like being awake at night, you know, it's like society is telling people, everyone, oh, you should fall asleep easily, you should stay asleep all night long, and then you should wake up feeling rested. And that's not the way normal human sleep works. It's just not. Like, you can feel rested in the morning, but the idea that you're not supposed to wake up at night at all, like that's not normal sleep. All right. You know, anyone who's stayed up all night in a sleep lab for a few years knows that people wake up multiple times, even like normal sleepers, they wake up. And so, you know, be okay with that. You know, don't beat yourself up. Be kind to yourself. It's like kind of a normal pattern. I think that's really important to always have in mind. Like, if you're awake, you're awake, you know, enjoy the time. Just don't beat yourself up that you're doing something wrong, that there's a specific thing you should have been doing or something like that. And so if you can do that, then you'll find that it's less common for you to go to bed when you're pretty tired or sleepy and not feel like a wave of alertness kick in, the hyper arousal kick in. That over time, like that change in your attitude will lead to you not making efforts to sleep. It'll lead to your brain not activating so quickly, you know, when you go to bed. It just becomes like a thing. Like, I'm just going to go out in my backyard and come back. Like, you're doing something and there's no emotion attached to it. There's no, you know,
no intent.
No intent. Exactly right. Exactly. So that's kind of what I read in that message there.
Yeah, Tilina, this is a common one and not a sign that something is weird, you know, unusual is happening. Neil says, when I was a child, I couldn't I couldn't fall asleep. My mom used to tell me, so don't sleep. If you feel you want to rest, close your eyes and rest. If you don't. And then he says, maybe mom should be a sleep coach. It really, I mean, honestly, this is such wonderful advice from your mom, Neil, because I see so often people that tell me, I've had trouble sleeping since I was 6 years old. And then I'm like, how do you know that? My mom told me I was a bad sleeper, you know? And that becomes so ingrained over time. Like, my child can't sleep, my child has a sleep problem. And you start believing that yourself, and it becomes like this self. So yes, anytime, if your mom wants a job, like, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. You're lucky, Neil, you got a great mom.
Yeah. Let's see, actually it says, when I start getting better and come out of insomnia after a few good nights, I worry that this should not come back now. That's a thing of the past. So past worries. How do I not think about it? Yeah, this is success regress to me. This is like the weird thing here with success regress is that one of the reasons you can have trouble sleeping is sleeping better. You know? And the weird thing is that when you're in this phase where you're kind of really, really struggling with sleep, the one thing that you kind of have going for you is that you don't have sort of much to lose. You're like, you're kind of willing, I'm willing to try this. I'm willing to work with you. I'm willing to try this. But then when you're starting to sleep better, you're like, I slept good for one night. Now I slept good two nights, three nights, four nights. Is this real? Can this be a can this happen like a fifth night? Or is this just a fluke? What happens if I fall back? Then am I back at the dinner? And then of course, with all that preoccupation, you're likely to then sleep very little because you were so, there was so much there's so much pressure on that fifth night, right? Yeah. And I think the key teaching for me here is that it is not the success. It's not sleeping well that is the problem, is how you think about it, like you're attaching pressure to it. So I think the key is like the best relapse prevention is being okay with a relapse. The best way to not worry about having trouble sleeping again is being okay. I will probably have trouble sleeping again, and if that happens, that's okay. Not trying to push away a potential setback or a relapse, or whatever you call it, right. Be okay to have it. I think that's the key. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, exactly. I think I think you can almost. I like to use the phrase "turn the tables," right? When it comes to sleep, because a lot of things, it's you think a certain thing, and then it's not really true. It's not really total reality, and so you turn the tables. And for this, actually, you have a few good nights. If a poor night happens, like, realize that you're okay. Realize that the next day you can still do what you want to do. Like, I kind of go back to that analogy of like the hiking analogy and stumble over a little rock kind of thing, and you just shrug and you go on. Like, everyone should do that with their sleep. Because if you don't, what it means is that you're thinking about your sleep during the day, you're preoccupied, and it can snowball. That hyperarousal can really get ramped up. What you need to do is you need to remind yourself that your brain produces sleep. You've proven it to yourself a few good nights in a row. You've proven it. It's not like your brain is suddenly changed if you have a poor night of sleep, right? It's not like suddenly all your neural wiring is completely different in your brain. It's the same. It's still you. It's the same you. It's just that you got something triggered you to start focusing on your sleep and thinking about it and like wondering what you're doing right and what you're, all this kind of stuff. You get really kind of micromanaging it, control that can often lead to a poor night. So, work on that side of it. But on the other side of it, it's just enjoy your day. Like, don't focus on the night. One of the best things I like to do, I like to remind people when I'm helping them with their sleep, is one of the best things you can do with your sleep is to forget about it in the morning. Like, literally forget. Don't even focus. Like, whatever it takes to forget something, I guess the answer is not to focus on it. It's how you forget something, right? If I'm thinking of like a phone number and suddenly I start thinking about something else, I'm probably going to forget the phone number. So forget about your sleep. And you might just find that you start to do that every single day and you start to shrug. And then you become one of those sleepers where it's like, oh, how'd you sleep last night? And you go, I don't know. I haven't really thought about it. How's your week been? I don't know. I'm just doing my thing. I'm going to work, or I'm doing this, or I'm seeing my friends, or whatever it is. You don't say, it took me like 90 minutes to fall asleep last Tuesday. And then I was up for, 2 hours and 45 minutes, which is 15 minutes longer than usual. And all this kind of stuff, hyper focus leads to hyper arousal, which perpetuates insomnia.
Neil adds to this, a real success is after a bad night, you don't sense it as a bad night, just another night. The moment you don't even think about your nights, you are good. And yeah,
love
you
that. Just love that.
It's kind of like, which, by the way, like getting kind of a little bit deep into philosophy here, but mm-hmm. I've read this book on Zen Buddhism, and I think they have this, like they talk about dualism as a real problem. And mm-hmm. are you familiar with this at all?
Like dualism, like sort of like a yin yang kind of idea?
No. This is dualism
as different.
Good, bad, preferred, okay. Unpreferred, better, worse. And basically the okay. thinking is that whenever you think this is good and this is bad, you end up in trouble. Like it's for sleep, it becomes when you think sleeping this much is good, sleeping little is bad, trouble. It's like when you reach equanimity, like if I sleep a lot, that's okay. If I sleep a little, that's also right. I'm okay with both. That's kind of the beauty of it. But when you start thinking about it, like it applies to life in general. You always think like, if I could do this, that would be good. If I didn't do that, that's bad. But we always think in like a dualism terms, and that dualism is not good for us. But anyway, that's a separate topic.
Well, and also, just like, I love this thread you're going on. Okay, so I think in our self-coaching Slack chat that we have, I think you commented to somebody about two comments. Like one comment is, I feel tired. The other is, I feel too tired.
Right.
It's like that really, like when I read that message that you sent, and I was like, that's so true. It's like you put a label, you put a qualifier or a qualitative label on something that is a natural experience to feel kind of tired. It happens to everyone off and on. But to be too some TOO, that implies that it's like limiting, that it's like, it's more, there's
more than it should be. There's an element of judgment there. Exactly.
And you're putting it on yourself.
And that's 100% super important. We should, I should definitely expand on that. We should talk more about that. Neil says, I just said, wherever you go, there you are. I've heard a lot about that book. I'm going to read it. Thanks, Neil, for sharing. All right, let's jump in. I think the other questions were probably not so long. I think we'll have time to answer everything here. Let's go ahead. This is Philip asking, hi, Michael, Daniel, how are you? We're good, thank you. Philip again, smiley, but I try to be short. Okay, one, when I wake up in the night, I'm analyzing whether I'm comfy or stressed. My mind says sometimes I'm not too stressed now. Okay, I stay in bed, but most of the time I get stressed from analyzing this fact, and in the end, I need to get up anyway. Wouldn't it be better in my case to be disciplined and say to myself before bedtime, okay, when I'm awake this night, I get up immediately, no matter what, comfy or stressed. Maybe in the long run, my mind will be less afraid of getting up because I know for sure I will need to get up. When in doubt, it's more stressful. Maybe every case is different and this is personal, but I think you know what I mean, 100%. I have a definitely answer for this one. Number two, now and then I dream whole fictional movies, but I'm not asleep. Is this a state between sleep and awake? Does the state has a name? I realize I'm not sleeping, but why does my mind give me so much dreams then? Unconsciously, I'm fighting them and therefore I cannot sleep. Is this a form of hyperarousal? I think you're onto something there. I never knew in the old days one could dream fictional stories or movies when I was even when I wake. Is this maybe my mind want to give me the impression that I'm sleeping, but still wants to be alert at the same time? Question mark. Take your time. And again, many thanks for all your energy on this channel. I love these questions. And I can go first, actually, because I think
sure.
The first question immediately made me think of something I learned from our good friend Nick Wignall, who's been guesting the channel a few times. And he said one of his teachings was, you know, imagine like we call it football here, but in Europe or Europe, it would be like American football, right? But the coach has this like playbook. And if this happens, we do this. If this happens, we do that. So there's like no question, like this is the play, okay? This is what we're gonna do, no question about it. And so what Nick said was that it's good to have a playbook. And so when you end up like you are, Philip, you're at night, you're wondering, should I stay in bed? Should I get up? Am I comfy enough? Am I stressed? Am I this? That, exactly like you say, leads to a lot of preoccupation and more hyperarousal, et cetera. So I think for someone like yourself, I think it is good to have a playbook and be like, I'm awake now. Yeah, I'm going to do this. This is exactly what I'm going to. I know exactly what. No debate, no discussion. I know exactly what. I think that could be really good. And you already thought along those lines. I think those are fantastic, option for you. And number two was, yeah, I call that hypersleep. I call it, and exactly like you say, I think it comes from hyperarousal. I call it hypersleep. And it's that, you know, it's kind of like you're, if you use the gas and brake model, you're sleepy and you are sleeping sometimes, but you have a break too. You have friction going on. So it's like not really sleeping, not really awake. You're in this mixed state. And then you can have a lot of these vivid dreams that seem to go on the entire night. So yeah, I think nothing unusual or strange about that one. Very common one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, the do I get out of bed or don't get out of bed question, I think if you're thinking about it a bit, that probably is your answer, you know? So, you know, I would leave it at that. It's introspective. It's no one can decide for you. There's not like a monitor you can have attached to you that tells you, yeah, get out of bed now. You know, well, oh gosh, I didn't mean to suggest that. Someone might invent one and then,
right,
you know,
right, exactly.
Sorry, I forget I just said that. Scratch that. No, it's, you know, it's where if it's how do you feel? Do you feel comfortable, relaxed, calm, enjoying it? You're probably fine. But if you're sort of to question, like, oh, am I kind of awake? I don't know. Let me think about it. You know, that's a cue. And then I do like with Nick Wignall, I like the idea of having a playbook, having options. You know, people say, oh, I like to read. Okay, have your book that you really like, that you like getting back into if you're awake at night, but have something else just in case. So you're not kind of fumbling around the house. You know, I've heard those stories sometime. I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't want to read the book anymore. Okay. So then they spend the next half an hour pacing the hallway or looking through closets, trying to find something to do. And then maybe they get engaged in something like too engaging at night, you know, like they're moving furniture around and they're repainting walls and, you know, you don't want to go down that road. So, you know, I think you're fine. Just, you know, you'll figure it out. It's it's whatever, you know, you're comfortable with. And then the other one, the dreams, I'm like, God, that's awesome. You could like cancel your Netflix subscription and you just got every movie just going in your mind. And I'm just being silly. I'm like that. Sorry. No, I think, you know, exactly what Coach Daniel was saying is that it's the gas break kind of fighting each other. I think that leads to a lot of it. I think, you know, later at night, it sounds like this is when it happens. A lot of REM pressure kind of going on. It's just sort of like adding to the mix of the dreams and that kind of stuff. It's kind of normalish physiology. Some people have vivid dreams, some don't, you know, we're all kind of different. But yeah, clearly you want to make sure, you know, you understand that there's probably some hyper arousal there that's causing your mind to be pretty active. And over time, just stick with it. Education, all the good stuff we've been talking about. And that'll start to decrease.
Absolutely. Actually says, yeah, life is ups and downs, so we'll sleep. It's okay. It's natural. Absolutely. And yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go good over stuff. To this last one from Nina. Okay, this is our last question, right? Yeah, it is. Okay, let's read this. Nina says, hi, Daniel. I can see how your program can work for relatively healthy people, but I am wondering, can it actually do anything for those who have severe depression? They wake up every 1 hour or so. With severe depression, the brain chemicals and hormones are so out of balance and it disrupts sleep very much. Same goes for anxiety disorders. What about those with chronic anxiety, those whose heart and mind is constantly racing and they're having constant anxiety for no reason? And those with gut problems. Gut produces serotonin, which produces melatonin. So when there are severe gut problems, it can very much disrupt sleep. Also hormonal imbalances in women, not just hot flashes, but serious imbalances in hormones, which can keep a woman up all night, no matter how she thinks about sleep. Also, what about chronic stress? When there's no way to get rid of stressors, what if sleep is beyond one's control? Yes, there's a lot of things that I would like to talk about here, but what's your first thoughts on this
well,
one,
Michael? Well, the last sentence, right? Kind of says a lot, yes. Right? It's just, there we go. What if you can't control sleep? Well, what that really means is that you're a human being. That's the bottom line. It means you are completely normal when it comes to sleep. You can't control it. It's not possible. Nobody can. And insomnia usually gets worse, it perpetuates the more you're trying to control something that you can't control. First and foremost, you have to remind yourself, if you're looking for a little self-talk, just occasionally, gently, kindly remind yourself it's not something you control. It's you can't. There's no way. And the harder you try, you look for all these little roads, we call them efforts, all these little ways of controlling it, they all backfire. They're all going to make you think more. It gets the hyperarousal growing more, all this kind of stuff. And that is more insomnia down the road. So you have to come to terms with it. And, there's it's education, learn about sleep and about insomnia and how it develops. And I think that's the key. That's the last sentence I just stuck with.
Yeah. Me. I want to, for everyone that's tuning in here, I was so happy you went there because that's exactly what I was thinking too. Nina says, what if sleep is beyond one's control? And just like to double down on that, nobody can control sleep. Sleep is beyond every human being's control, and it is the desire for control that is the problem. And then taking it from then further on, you know, I think for a lot of people like this, what I'm about to say is kind of like heretic, but I truly believe this, that all the things we label as mental health problems really come from the same place. When it comes to depression, anxiety, chronic pain, chronic fatigue, you know, they all come from an attempt at avoiding something that is uncomfortable. If you are feeling sad and you start labeling that as that's not good, I'm feeling sad all the time. Why am I so sad? What can I do to be more sad? You get depressed. If you label anxiety as something undesirable, I'm feeling anxious. What can I do with my anxiety? You become more anxious. If you try to control your thoughts, you get racing thoughts, et cetera, et cetera. So I think actually my program or my philosophy, if you will, which is not mine, as Sasha Stevens pointed out, it's just truth, really. It's just, we're just purveyors of these truths that have been around for thousands of years. That works for everything. If you don't judge anything you experience as bad, if you're willing to experience anything, then you get to that state where everything is acceptable and you don't suffer at all. That is my belief.
Yeah, it's like mindfulness and ACT kinds of ideas, but not like in a quiet, separate moment of your waking life. It's sort of like all the time. It's like it's almost like as much as possible, you're in a mindful kind of state where you're not judging things. You're not judging, you know, your reaction to things. It just kind of is. And if you can adopt that, then you find that, you know, the labels kind of like dissolve, they kind of melt away and things become less of a problem that maybe were a problem, sleep being a big one, right? So it's sort of a big picture thing. It really is.
Absolutely. And this has become my go-to answer now when people like, how about if I'm very anxious? They're like, they're all from the same place. Learn about anxiety and you see how you can sleep well. Learn about insomnia, you see how you can be less depressed, et cetera, et cetera. Let's see. Michael says, I'm working through my general anxiety and the answer is pretty much the same, always the same. You don't control any of that anxiety, but accept it. I tried fighting anxiety for years and I always lost the fight.
Yep.
Shakespeare, nothing is either bad or good, but thinking makes it so. Yes. True again. All right, perfect. That's a very nice place to end this live. Everyone, thanks so much for all the input, and we'll be back very soon. And I'm heading over to my one-on-one, one-hour session with one of our clients. So if anyone wants that, we can't guarantee it. But right now, we have just a few members in our self-coaching program. So if you would like a lot of attention from me and Coach Michael, then head there. And yeah, that's it. We'll see you soon.
All right, everybody. Great questions. See you later.
Bye-bye.